On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Diet.
And I'm Andrina Hoff. Coming up...
What happened in Las Vegas is in many ways a miracle. The police department has done such an incredible job. And we'll be talking about gun laws as time goes by.
We'll cross to our correspondent Maggie Palmer for the latest on the investigation.
Also coming up tonight, climate scientists warn of extreme heat in Australia by the turn of the century.
With a little bit more global warming, there's a possibility of getting even more extreme temperatures and potentially even hitting the 50-degree mark.
And hundreds of thousands of people have demonstrated in Catalonia after the Spanish police crackdown on the independence referendum.
Those stories and more coming up in the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. With the news at 6 o'clock, I'm Andrina Hoff. A man who killed 58 people and injured more than 520 in a shooting attack in Las Vegas apparently transferred around $127,000 Australian dollars in the days prior and set up cameras in and around his hotel suite. US officials are still searching the crime scene, a hotel room on the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Hotel, from where 64-year-old Stephen Paddock launched his deadly assault on a country music festival. Authorities are also trying to determine the motive, taking a closer look at his Filipina-Australian girlfriend Mary Lou Danley, who has arrived back in the United States. Almost 50 firearms belonging to Mr. Paddock have now been recovered across three locations. Under-Sheriff Kevin McCahill has praised the police's response.
We know that the suspect fired over a dozen or so volleys, and we know that the firing by the suspect ceased at 10:19. So I want you to think about that. The first minute the police are aware of shots being fired at 10:08, and it stops at 10:19. That's a remarkable response by this police department.
The federal government is pushing for suspected terrorists to be detained for a fortnight without charge. Currently, most states allow for suspects to be held for 7 days. At a COAG meeting this week, the Prime Minister will urge state and territory leaders to adopt New South Wales' model, where suspects can be held a week longer. Malcolm Turnbull is confident the proposed laws won't breach the Constitution.
Well, the safeguards are, of course, that the detention has to be approved by a judicial officer, by a magistrate, so... That provides the oversight of the courts, and that will be continued under the proposed extension to 14 days, which would make it consistent with what New South Wales has already legislated for.
State and federal leaders will also consider a proposal to hand over pictures of all licensed drivers to allow the expansion of facial recognition systems. Meanwhile, Victoria will set up a new centre to assess potential terrorists and lone wolf attackers. Staffed by specialist police, forensic and mental health experts, the Fixated Threat Assessment Centre is expected to process up to 300 people in its first year. And in New South Wales, judges will be handed the power to detain terror-related offenders who finished their prison sentences but are still deemed to pose a risk to the community. The Supreme Court can already grant continuing detention or extended supervision orders for such criminals for up to 5 years, provided an application is made in the last 6 months of their sentence. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian says while New South Wales already has the toughest laws in the country, the moves are necessary to keep the public safe. Catalan leaders have vowed to press ahead with the region's secession from Spain. Tens of thousands of Catalans have taken to the streets to protest the violent police crackdown on the weekend's independence referendum. Local authorities say some 900 people were injured on polling day when police fired rubber bullets and charged at crowds with truncheons to disrupt the vote. The poll and its aftermath have plunged Spain into its worst constitutional crisis in decades. In a rare televised address and speaking through a translator, Spain's King Felipe VI has accused Catalan leaders of dividing the country.
They have divided ultimately the Catalonian society. Today, Catalonian society is broken, fractured, and the authorities have not appreciated all the solidarity feelings that unite all Spanish citizens, and they can put at risk the economic and social stability of Catalonia and Spain as well.
US President Donald Trump says he's satisfied with the federal response to the damage wrought by Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, despite criticism over how long it took the government to address the crisis. President Trump, who's had to contend with Hurricanes Harvey, Irma and Maria in the past 6 weeks, commented that the disasters were taking a toll on the US budget. 2 weeks after Maria hit, many of the US island's 3.4 million residents are still without power, clean water and food, and the death toll has more than doubled to 34. The White House is preparing to ask Congress for a $37 billion Australian dollar aid package for Puerto Rico and other areas hit by natural disasters. And taking a look at tomorrow's weather now. In Perth, it will be sunny and 23. Adelaide, a possible shower and 18 degrees. Melbourne, showers as well and 22. Hobart will see rain and 17 degrees. A possible afternoon shower for Canberra and 25. Wollongong, partly cloudy and 25 as well. In Sydney, more cloud and 26. Newcastle will be partly cloudy with morning fog and 27. Cloudy with the chance of a shower and 28 for Brisbane. Showers in Cairns and 31. And in Darwin, partly cloudy and 33. And Greg, more on those stories coming up on SBS World News with Michael Tomalaris at 6:30.
Thanks, Andrea. Right across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio, 7 past 6. Police investigating a motive for the mass shooting in Las Vegas are examining why the gunman transferred $100,000 to the Philippines in the days before the massacre. Stephen Paddock sent the funds to the Philippines, where his girlfriend Mary Lou Danley has family. Our correspondent Maggie Palmer is in Las Vegas and says that Danley has flown back to the United States from the Philippines, and the FBI is keen to talk to her.
So she's flown back into the United States with the FBI. We understand she's touched down in LAX, where obviously police will be very keen to speak with her to see what she knew, if anything, about her partner's planning of what was an enormous, as we now know, mass murder.
Because one of the things the investigators are looking at is this transfer by Paddock of $100,000 to the Philippines just days before he committed the crime.
Exactly right. So we know that she's originally from the Philippines. She's got family there. We know she also travels on an Australian passport. But the fact that he transferred an enormous amount of money over there, there's no confirmation that it did go to her. There's no confirmation that she knew that money was coming. But no doubt that's what authorities will be investigating, because they're really keen to get to the bottom of this as to what she knew, if anything, about what Paddock was planning to do.
We seem to be gradually finding out more about Paddock himself. News emerging today that understand he's a former accountant who definitely loved to gamble.
Yeah, he did, and everyone that knew him spoke about that. It was pretty common knowledge that he was a big gambler. He had a lot of big wins and no doubt a lot of big losses as well. His brother said that once he spoke to Paddock when he'd had a win of more than $200,000. So he was a fairly high roller. We understand that he had multiple properties and he'd done fairly well for himself. Financially, he most recently lived in what's been described as a sleepy retirement community not far from Las Vegas here. But yeah, was a big gambler, hence why he was in Las Vegas a lot gambling. So, you know, a really interesting backstory. And again, police just searching for a motive. What caused him to do this? What is it that caused him to fire hundreds and hundreds of rounds into a country music crowd?
Some people might have seen the leaked photos of the casino hotel room. What can you tell us about those?
So, interestingly, what we now know is that he'd actually set up a fairly sophisticated surveillance system himself. So he had cameras hooked up throughout the hotel, including out the front of his room, built into a trolley so that presumably he could see if and when authorities were on their way to him. Also, some visions being released today of the SWAT team as they stormed his room. Very dramatic vision as to what happened there. And, of course, we know now that Paddock himself shot out the door before authorities entered, injuring someone, and then by the time they actually entered the room, he had killed himself. But very dramatic footage that's been released today.
A gun dealer was quoted, and this is a guy in North Las Vegas, saying that he actually sold some weapons to Paddock and that Paddock met all the state and federal requirements, including an FBI background check.
Yeah, and, you know, here in Nevada, it's pretty lax in terms of, you know, what you need to do to buy a gun. Certainly by Australian standards, it's pretty lax in general here in the United States, but some states are more lenient than others. Here, it's not that hard. So pretty much all you need is a residence ID and then a background check, which we understand can be as quick as an hour. So essentially, you can walk into a store and walk out within the hour and have a gun to your name. And actually, if you go to a private dealer, you don't even have to go into that much depth. You can actually manage to purchase guns here without any of those background checks at all. But in his case, we know that, yes, gun dealers have come forward and confirmed that he did legally, above board, purchase weapons from them.
So as a journalistic exercise, I understand you put Nevada's gun laws to the test by trying to buy a gun yourself. Tell us about that.
We did. So everyone here kept telling us how easy it was to buy a gun. So we went to Walmart, which is essentially a cross between Big W and Coles, I guess. They sell everything from groceries to underwear to rifles, would you believe it? So we went in there to try and buy a gun. They were very kind. They showed me lots of different rifles, including pink ones, including pink and purple speckled ones and others that were sort of very heavy and beautiful with wood and metal. But ultimately, we weren't able to purchase one because I do not live here in Nevada, so I don't have a residential address. But if I did, it would have been super easy. But I certainly was able to purchase ammunition and bullets. But the gun itself, because I'm a non-resident, I couldn't. But it was fascinating how easy it was, how blasé they are about it all. The rifle section of the department store itself was actually next door to the kids' sporting equipment. So there was sort of kids' rollerblades and a little mini basketball hoop right next to the rifle section. So all a very odd experience.
Maggie Palmer in Las Vegas. And you can see her report tonight on SBS World News at 6:30 with Michael Tomalaris. Well, our reporter Samantha Benniat-Brooks has been monitoring the political reaction in the US. President Trump has described the Vegas gunman as a very sick individual.
What happened in Las Vegas is in many ways a miracle. The police department has done such an incredible job, and we'll be talking about gun laws as time goes by. He was a sick man, a demented man. A lot of problems, I guess, and we're looking into him very, very seriously, but we're dealing with a very, very sick individual.
Once again, the mass shooting has sparked conversation about changing the country's gun laws. Despite the increasing number of shootings and the easy availability of weapons under the Constitution's Second Amendment, change has proven politically impossible so far. Recalling the 2012 shooting at a school in the state of Connecticut, Democratic Senator Christopher Murphy says the mass shootings will continue if laws are not addressed.
And I want my colleagues to understand the pain that comes when the victims of this kind of epidemic violence see nothing but silence from this body. The hurt is deep. The scars are wide in Newtown, but they are made wider by the fact that this body in 4.5 years has done absolutely nothing to reduce the likelihood of another mass shooting. And indeed, because we have done nothing, the mass shootings continue.
Democrat Senator Christopher Murphy. Thirteen past six, coming up on the show, climate scientists warn of extreme heat by the turn of the century.
Both Melbourne and Sydney have had temperatures of around the 46-degree mark. With a little bit more global warming, there's a possibility of getting even more extreme temperatures and potentially even hitting the 50-degree mark.
That story in full a bit later. 16 past six. National security will be the focus of a COAG meeting tomorrow in Canberra, and Malcolm Turnbull is hoping to convince state and territory leaders to adopt an approach being used in New South Wales, where terror suspects can be held for 2 weeks without charges being laid. Canberra correspondent James Elton Pym says both Victoria and New South Wales have made their own counter-terror announcements in the lead-up to COAG.
So New South Wales boasts of having the strictest laws currently in terms of the amount of time you can detain someone suspected of terrorism without a charge. You can do that for 2 weeks at the moment in New South Wales. Today, what the Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, announced is that they want to become the toughest in the post-sentencing space as well. So this is a new rule that they're going to bring in which will allow New South Wales to detain someone who they think may have been radicalised while they were in prison, even after their sentence has expired. And they can do that up to 5 years with the permission of the Supreme Court.
We also saw an announcement from the Victorian government.
Yes, we did. So the Victorian police have announced that they're going to set up a new unit, and that unit is going to specialise in finding people who are at risk of being radicalised, and particularly people who are at risk of being lone wolves. And they're going to bring together different sorts of detectives to do that. But basically, it's going to be a unit of the police that will specialise in that very specific kind of terrorism, these lone wolf attacks, which have been the kind that have dominated most of the thwarted and realised terror attacks in this country.
Now, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull seems to support these initiatives, calling on the states to adopt the New South Wales model.
That's right. So at the COAG meeting tomorrow, the federal government and Malcolm Turnbull will be pressuring the other states and territories to follow the New South Wales lead and extend the amount of time that you can detain a terrorist suspect before a charge is laid up to 14 days, so 2 weeks. At the moment, just about every other state is significantly lower than that. They're around the 7-day mark. In some states, like South Australia, it's much less than that. It's only hours rather than weeks. And the reason for that is that the AFP say that police often need that extra time to gather evidence so that they can successfully prosecute someone for a terrorism offence, and they won't any longer have to wait and risk the attack actually being carried out. You know, this will allow them to detain somebody where they think there's a public safety risk without necessarily needing to press charges right away.
So I've had politicians talking in favour of these proposals. Is anyone suggesting anything counter to what we're hearing today as to whether or not these initiatives are even needed?
So the most controversial one that's being put to the COAG meeting tomorrow is this new system for biometric security. So what the federal government wants to do is to get the states to hand over the photos on driver's licences, because at the moment the federal government, being the Commonwealth, only has access to passports, and only about half of the people in Australia have a passport. So what they'll do is they'll get the states, if they get their way, they'll get the states to hand over driver's licence photos and put them all into a national database that can then be used in face matching software in public places, most notably airports and shopping centres. And they say that if someone's been suspected of carrying out an attack or planning an attack, they'll be able to much more easily pick up on that person entering a sports stadium or an airport by cross-referencing it with this national database. Now, Labor has indicated, as they usually do, that they're willing to offer bipartisan support on national security matters, but the Greens have come out and criticised this as being a bit of an overreach and saying that it impinges people's personal privacy.
And James, is anything else being proposed?
There's also a proposal for the possession of instruction manuals to be banned. So if you download something like a bomb-making recipe or a how-to guide on how to hijack a vehicle or something, anything like that that could be perceived as an instruction manual on how to do terrorism, just possessing that document would now be an offence if the federal government gets its way, without having to prove that you had any intention or had the capacity to actually carry out an attack. There'll also be new rules proposed that'll make it an offence to carry out terrorism hoaxes. This is where you say, invent a bomb scare, and then that diverts police attention and resources, and it turns out to be a hoax. That will now be a criminal offence, and it'll be more clearly defined than it currently is.
That's James Elton-Pym in Canberra. 21 past six, coming up, protests in Catalonia over the crackdown on the independence referendum.
All people wanted to do is vote, express their feelings. There was a lot of aggression. The police began beating people when all we wanted to do was exercise our fundamental right. It was only a question that was asked that day. We don't think it should have been handled the way it was.
Now, here's a prediction. Melbourne and Sydney could be experiencing 50-degree days by the turn of the century. The warning comes from a new climate change study and says Australian cities are on track for unprecedented extreme heat, even if the world meets its Paris climate change targets. Here's Andrea Nierhoff.
Scorching summers are already the norm in Australia, but they could be about to get much hotter. Currently, the Earth is experiencing 1 degree of global warming. The 2015 Paris Climate Accord sets a target of no more than 2 degrees. Using current Bureau of Meteorology climate data and global climate models, a team of researchers examined Australia's future if temperatures continue to rise. Lead researcher Dr. Sophie Lewis says the findings are alarming.
We already know that cities are stressed by heat waves in Australia in summer. We know that they pose a challenge for human health, and we have more hospital admissions, we have more bushfire weather. It's a real challenge for agriculture when we have these extremes. Energy production, we know that we can have blackouts and that can affect our industry. And that's with the extremes that we're having at the moment. So if we have these enhanced extremes in the future, we're really going to be hard-pressed to cope with that unless we start preparing now.
Published in Geophysical Research Letters, the research, compiled by the Australian National University, found New South Wales's record extremes could increase by up to 3.8 degrees. University of Melbourne climate scientist Dr. Andrew King says simulations showed temperatures in Victoria would rise by 2.3 degrees.
So in these cities, Melbourne and Sydney, we have the occasional 40-degree day. So Melbourne often gets a 40-degree day in summer. But we have had even higher temperatures in some years. So both Melbourne and Sydney have had temperatures of around the 46-degree mark. With a little bit more global warming, there's a possibility of getting even more extreme temperatures and potentially even hitting the 50-degree mark.
Dr. King says while those extremes are likely to become more frequent, they will still be relatively rare.
Those kinds of extremes are definitely projected to become more frequent, but the 50-degree headline temperature, that's something that would still be extremely rare in the 2-degree world under the Paris Agreement, but it's a possibility.
Dr. Lewis says the impact of temperature rises will be widespread.
So our results show that everyone in Australia is likely to be affected by these extremes, and they're likely to hit all the way across Australia. We also looked at changes in the Coral Sea region. We know that the Great Barrier Reef has been stressed by warming in recent years. In 2016 and 2017, we had a bleaching event that really pushed the reef's health. So that's with the extremes that we're having at the moment.
But Dr. King says it's still possible to reduce the effects of climate change.
We can try and prevent these extreme heat events from occurring in the first place, or at least limit their likelihood of occurrence by reducing our greenhouse gas emissions and trying to prevent severe global warming in the first place.
As more unbearable summers look commonplace, Dr. Andrew King says Australia will need to prepare to adapt to the extreme heat.
We certainly will need to adapt, and it's going to be very difficult. So some of it could just be changes in culture around these extreme heat events. So avoiding going out in the middle of the day, obviously not doing outdoor work during the hottest days, just staying better hydrated, maybe infrastructure that's better designed to cope with these extreme heat events.
Dr. Andrew King ending that story, which was produced by Samantha Beniac-Brooks. Hundreds of thousands of people have demonstrated in Catalonia after Spain's police crackdown on the independence referendum that the government had banned. And in a rare move, the Spanish king has made a televised address accusing Catalan leaders of disloyalty and what he calls irresponsible behaviour. Rosemary Bolger has the story.
Fewer police, more education. Protesters chanted as they took over the streets of Barcelona in the heart of the Spanish region of Catalonia. As the entire region went on a general strike following Sunday's chaotic independence referendum, Catalans have directed much of their anger towards the national police. This man, identifying himself as Manuel, was among the 700,000 who took to the streets.
All people wanted to do is vote, express their feelings. There was a lot of aggression. The police began beating people when all we wanted to do was exercise our fundamental right. It was only a question that was asked that day. We don't think it should have been handled the way it was.
Local authorities say 900 people were injured on polling day when police fired rubber bullets and charged at crowds with truncheons to disrupt the banned vote. Of the 42% of Catalans who cast ballot papers, regional leaders say 90% voted in favour of breaking away from Spain. The overwhelming result was no surprise, because residents who favour remaining part of Spain mostly boycotted the vote. Opinion polls before the vote suggested only about 40% of residents in the region backed independence, although a majority wanted a referendum held. Now, both independence supporters and non-separatists are joining in the protests, united by the violence of police trying to enforce the Spanish government's ban on the vote. This woman, named Era, explained.
We all have different ideologies, but besides that fact, we are all out in the streets to avoid and say no to the national police forces. They hit old people, children and ordinary people with their sticks and in an ugly fashion.
Protesters demanded police get out of the country's northeastern region, labelling them occupation forces. To emphasise the point, crowds stuck up their middle fingers at a police helicopter as it flew overhead. The crisis has prompted Spain's King Felipe VI to make a rare televised address to the nation.
Hoy la sociedad catalana está fracturada.
Today, Catalan society is fractured and confronted. These authorities have despised the affections and solidarity feelings that have united and will unite all Spaniards. Due to their irresponsible behaviour, they can even jeopardise the economic and social stability of Catalonia and all of Spain.
The political crisis is considered Spain's worst since an attempted military coup in 1981. That was defused by King Felipe's father, King Juan Carlos I. In the stern, pre-recorded message, King Felipe has told viewers Spain's democratic principles are strong and solid.
Son momentos difíciles, pero los superaremos.
These are difficult moments, but we will overcome them. They are very complex moments, but we will go ahead because we believe in our country and we are proud of what we are.
Orgullosos de lo que somos.
Many Catalans were quick to dismiss the message as out of touch.
Rosemary Bolger with that story. 29 past the hour, time to check the news headlines. France's parliament has adopted an anti-terrorism bill that will bolster police surveillance powers and make it easier to close mosques suspected of preaching hatred. As we've been hearing tonight, a new report has warned that climate change could see Melbourne and Sydney experience 50-degree days by the turn of the century. And former Prime Minister Bob Hawke has slammed the same-sex marriage postal survey, calling it the worst economic decision ever made by a Prime Minister. Well, there's some of the stories making news. You can see a lot more on SBS World News with Michael Tomalaris coming up at 6:30. You can also live stream the bulletin on our website. If you're not near a TV, just go to sbs.com.au/news. And you can also get our content in your Facebook news feed by liking our page on Facebook, SBS World News. That's the program for tonight. I'm Greg Dyett. Thanks for listening.